I'm John Kroll. Today is Veterans Day. On This No Limits, we're going to talk about some ways that our returning warriors can work through and express what they've seen and what they've come back to. We're going to talk about combat paper and the Veterans Coming Home Project. My guest will be Juliet King, director of the Graduate Art Therapy Program at the Heron School of Art and Design, our own Lee Danoon of WFYI News, and art therapy veteran Andrew Schneiders. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, This News.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about a couple of special projects that are associated with Veterans Day. It's a way of honoring the warriors who have come back to us. One of them is the Combat Paper. It's a veterans art program, and the Veterans Coming Home Project. If you'd like to join the conversation on this special Veterans Day, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guests are Juliet King, who is the director of the Graduate Art Therapy Program at Heron School of Art and Design, our own Lee Danoon of WFYI News, and Andrew Schneiders, who is a veteran and has practiced art therapy. Welcome to all of you. It's good to have you here in the studio.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, I'm going to start first with Andrew because this is your day. This is the day that we are, and I'm going to ask you for the moment to stand in for all of the veterans everywhere so that we can thank you for your service. But also just tell us a little bit about what brought you to this point.
Well, thank you, John. I've had a long and interesting journey that got me to this place. I kind of joined the military somewhat backwards. I was 34 when I enlisted. I was semi-accomplished. I had done some great things and traveled in life and just had that patriotic calling to join. And as time went on, I was in the National Guard, but I was given the chance to board and be brought into the AGR system, which is the active guard. So I serve every day wearing the uniform. And I really enjoyed it and felt the honor and privilege to wear the uniform more and more every day. I didn't necessarily expect that when I first joined, to be honest. I didn't know what it would evolve into. And as time went on, I found myself, being engaged in more activities, doing funeral honors and things like that. And then, so this great sense of, like I said, patriotism and stuff like that was inside of me. And then I got called up to actually, deploy, go overseas. I went to Iraq in 2009, and I was there for 11 months in country. And my attitude changed a little bit overseas, 6-9 months in. Things weren't going as well inside of me, and I was having some internal struggles. And so when I came home, I did the standard issue what a lot of guys and girls do. I avoided it and blamed it on other things, or just tried to deal with it on my own until I got to that point where I realized I need to do something to make myself right. I wasn't far off the mark, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of guys and girls out there that are having some tremendous issues, which is why I'm here, because really I want to encourage others to seek that help.
If I could real quickly, you say yours was a non-traditional and you joined at the age of 34, and I promise we will get to the therapy piece of this, but yeah. I'm just interested in your story here. you say that it was a sense of patriotism. Was there a particular event or whatever that sort of triggered that impulse in you?
Sure.
And said, I need to be there.
Naturally, I think with the majority of us that definitely joined at that time. And
what year was this?
2006. You know, I had been affected by the traumatic events of September 11th, and that was always in the back of my mind. And, you know, I had been a school teacher at the time, and I was meeting other veterans and other people serving, and a guy in my neighborhood ironically came over one day and said, hey, you know, we started chatting it up, and next thing I know, I'm ready to roll. I wanted to join right there and then. And this,
and then you said you came back here with some things to work through. Is that a product of things that you saw while you were over there?
You know, my deployment wasn't Call of Duty 4. It wasn't kicking in doors and throwing hand grenades. But no matter what your assignment is when you're deployed, everyone goes through these events or being separated from your family and friends and the lifestyle that we have that we, you know, get to enjoy here in America, and the driving your car, the freedoms, all the little things, they really add up when that's stripped away from you. Mm-hmm. And then you got the stressful environment of the combat environment and the austere environment and, you know, people wanting to do you ill.
Mm-hmm.
And that all, it all weighs on everybody. That's the product of war. No matter what part you see, you know, how gruesome it is or how trivial it is, you're still going through that in somewhat isolated, you know, you're on your own, so to speak, even though you have battle buddies and friends around you and people you're serving with in a protected somewhat environment, it weighs on anybody. And
Juliet, tell me a little bit about how art works to alleviate those kinds of stresses. Andrew's description, which I'm sure does not convey anywhere near the half of what that experience is like, still sounds like it's an awful lot for a human being to process and deal with. And we routinely ask that of the people, you know, we send overseas or ask to serve in some capacity.
Sure. And what Andrew is saying is also how everybody has their own personal experience. And so no matter what that is, to be able to honor one's own experience and lived experience is really important. And it's really difficult to put words to ourselves. It's difficult to explain our feelings, and it's difficult to explain all the different complexities that are going on within us. Just as people walking down the street, you know, me and you sitting right here. When people experience stress or trauma, that capacity becomes even more limited. And so in the very nature of the way that we are made, we often have a difficult time connecting our feelings with our words. And so the process of art making and the elements of creativity that are inherent in that make it a little easier.
We're talking really about two related ways of processing this experience with combat paper, Veterans Art Program, and the Veterans Coming Home Project. Lee, could you explain what those are briefly?
I'll start with the Veterans Coming Home Project because that's what I've been working on this year. And I have had the help of Heron School of Art and Design and Juliet and the Vonnegut Library, Julie Whitehead there.
All of whom have been guests on the show.
Right.
The past,
so yeah. They were our partners in this Veterans Coming Home Project. WFYI has a website, wfyi.veteranscominghome.org.
Go ahead and give them to that again.
wfyi.veteranscominghome.org. And on this site, which is for veterans and families, you'll find the stories of the people that we interviewed this year to talk about how art has helped them through coming home and transitioning and their difficulties after serving. And also there are resources for people if they need, you know, jobs or medical care or different things. They can go to the site and find those different resources. Public television and radio stations all across the country are also working on this project. So it's not just about how art has helped veterans, but there are stories that run the gamut of, mm-hmm. of veterans on the site. Combat Paper is actually was spearheaded by a guy that was in town, brought to town by Heron last week. And Drew Cameron holds mm-hmm. workshops where people bring in their uniforms mm-hmm. and they tear them into little pieces, and then they are pulverized into pulp, and then they're actually, their uniforms are then made into paper. So it's a creative process. It's and actually, Andrew's taken part the last 2 years in the workshops, so he can probably speak to what it's like to cut up his uniform and do that. So that's what those two things are.
We are talking about really veterans' experiences on this Veterans Day and the ways that they can process them. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Andrew, I think Lee actually gave you a cue there. in terms of you, twice you've gone through this process of cutting up your uniform.
Yes, sir. I
call
started
me John, please.
Yes, John.
We're not in the military.
yeah, last year was my first year participating in it. It was very interesting concept that Drew has put together with this mobile pulp machine that he takes across the country and somewhat overseas. You deconstruct your uniform, and that in itself is I don't know a good word for it. It's just a very interesting process. You have this, for me, it was kind of ritualistic almost, going to the event and having, I brought a uniform that I wore in combat and you're taking a scissor to it and you're taking it apart very methodically for me and having these memories and thoughts and flushing the system with that. But in the end, I was able to not only deconstruct the uniform, but construct it into something artistic. I made paper out of it. I did what do you call it when we spray painted the stuff on it? Painted imagery on it with other different colored pulps. I took a combat patch that I had and soaked it into the paper and made some different designs out of it. And it was just a very
cathartic.
Yeah,
that's a big word.
A big word. Well, let's take it down then to a human level. I mean, did you feel a sense of relief?
Absolutely.
Did you feel a sense? Yeah.
Sure. And I'm there with other veterans too. I mean, that's the whole kicker.
So you get to share it.
That's what these guys do. That's so cool. I think is that you forget you're in therapy sometimes, so to speak. Not that Combat Paper so centered around therapy as much as Juliet's project is, with art therapy proper. But you know, the Combat Paper experience was neat because we're all sitting around talking about, hey, what'd you do? What's your story? What's it like? What do you do now? Cool. You know, we're encouraging each other. We're building each other up. And you don't even realize you're doing it. You're just being a regular, you know, regular guy or girl on the street.
Well, it sounds to me, I mean, to some degree, like it gives you an opportunity to, A, to make some sense of your experience.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, if you deconstruct it and you reconstruct it, I mean, that works pretty well as a metaphor.
Sure.
It is a way of owning the experience.
Absolutely.
Too, and saying, okay, this is mine and mine alone.
Yeah. And it's cool, too, because you stop comparing yourself to others. You stop thinking, oh, well, you know, like one female that was in the group was like, well, I didn't do this. I was this, or I was a secretary, or I was, you know, and the other guy is this decorated green beret, whatever, you know, butt kicking kind of dude. But we're all the same. You know, that's the point. We're all veterans. We all have, you know, different experiences, but yet they're all the same. You know, and we're exploring different ways just to kind of, you know, help each other out. And, you know, by helping you heal and you heal others, it's just a win-win, situation when you get involved in these projects. I can't say enough about it.
And you've done it twice, two different uniforms?
Combat paper? Well, yeah. I had excess from last year, so I froze it, and I brought it back to Drew this year, and he thought that was really cool. So that's a whole other conversation we had. It was really kind of neat.
Okay. We are talking about Veterans Day today on No Limits. Two projects, the Combat Paper Veterans Art Program and the Veterans Coming Home Project. My guests are Juliet King, Lee DeNoon, and Andrew Schneiders. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about really the process of coming back as a veteran and coming to terms with your experiences, making them your own. My guests are Juliet King, who is the director of the Graduate Art Therapy Program at Heron School of Art and Design, our own Lee DeNoon, who is with WFYI News, and Andrew Schneiders, who is a veteran who also has gone through this art therapy. Okay, Juliet, we've established kind of what Andrew's experience has been. Could you talk with me a little bit about why art works so beautifully for these veterans to make sense of what they have seen?
Sure. And before I do that, I make what I think is a really important distinction?
Sure.
And that is, I like to look at art experiences on a continuum. And so you have combat paper on one end of the continuum, which I'll call a therapeutic art experience. Mm-hmm. And on the other end of the continuum, you have the clinical, medical, and healthcare profession of art therapy. Mm-hmm. And the goals for these experiences are really different. But there's a lot of integration and a lot of crossover in terms of the art-making process and in terms of how each process can be a transformative one. And so the goals for Combat Paper are to bring veterans and the community together in the effort to make paper. And Drew Cameron is really specific about how his process might be a healing one, but he doesn't tout it as such. And he knows that he is not a therapist and even is very cautious about describing his work as therapeutic. Because when you're in an environment such as that and your goals are not to be doing therapy, then we have to be really careful about the language that we're using. And Combat Paper isn't a therapy project. However, a lot of what occurs within that process is inherently therapeutic. And as Andrew said, mm-hmm. you get to learn more about yourself, you get to talk with different people, and you feel better, mm-hmm. right? So over on the other end of the continuum is art therapy, where we work with people of all ages and that have all different kinds of challenges in both medical and healthcare settings. And we have specific goals that we work on. And so the groups that we ran at the VA, which were on a volunteer basis, myself and Dr. Brandy Ludke, a research psychologist, we ran mindfulness-based art therapy groups. And the goals of these groups were to help understand the lived experience of the people that were participating. They were to help the people that were participating decrease stress and potential mm-hmm. anxiety, to explore feelings related to their combat experience, and to work on themes and issues of identity and looking at how does a person see themselves pre-combat and post-combat. Mm-hmm. And so what the art therapist does is develop different kinds of interventions and strategies to work with people in that context. And so to get back to your original question, we use different materials and methods and work with different people to engage them in the process of making art.
And I guess what you've said here raises a different kind of question. Mm-hmm. Is art, do you use the art in part, you use the term intervention, which is obviously a therapeutic
mm-hmm.
term.
Mm-hmm.
do you use the art, in effect, to get past some of the resistance mm-hmm. that often comes with other sorts of interventions, that it's a way of, to some degree, accessing whatever mm-hmm. the source of concern might be without the defensiveness that often comes with talking about it?
That is such an amazing question and beautifully said. So art therapists work with both the process of making art and the products that they create from it. And in doing so, we are able to tap into different areas of our brain and different areas of our psyche with materials and interventions. And it helps provide a distance between yourself. When you're working on something, when you're working on a project, you're maybe become in the zone. Right? And your brain is doing something different at that time. You have more distance, you have more objectivity, there's likely a sense of relaxation that might happen. And that inherently is going to make it easier to talk about. But then you have what it is that you make. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what people make is somewhat surprising to them. And within the therapeutic context, with the assistance and support of the therapist, we talk together about what your artwork means to you. And when you talk about what it is that you make, you're also using a different brain process. So we use the materials to tap into the unconscious system, the limbic system, the more primitive system, which is where traumatic memories are held for all of us. And when we talk about our work, again, in that therapeutic context, we're able to bypass some of the resistances and defenses, as you say, and put a more cognitive and linear description to what it is that you're doing. Now, the more that you practice that, you're basically practicing knowing how you feel, and you're basically practicing feeling better in that process.
What are the sources of the defensiveness that you have to get? What creates that, particularly with veterans, since we're talking in a...
Well, so
this context.
That's a big question, right? I could go all on psychoanalytic theory with that one. It's making me hot. But I think in terms of veterans, in terms of the context that we're talking about with trauma, there is a very big range of what constitutes a stress reaction and what constitutes, say, a post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we can look at a response to combat or a response to deployment as traumatic, and it is a healthy response. So mm-hmm. the way that we react to situations that might be scary or terrifying or et cetera is a healthy way that our brains function. Now, what ends up happening, though, is because of the process of the way that we think and the way that we feel, the emotional material to what we experience gets put somewhere else, and it gets put into a place that's more body-based, mm-hmm. that's more somatic. And that's what I mean by the more primitive brain, the more unconscious brain. And so that's just the nature of how human beings handle their stress.
We are talking about how veterans process their experiences here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Lee, what I'm hearing, if there's a common theme out of all of this, it is important for veterans, particularly, you know, in the stressful situations that they often come back, to be able to share their stories. It is important for them to feel like there is a community, you know, of understanding. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, how the Veterans Coming Home Project tries to work toward those two ends.
I was going to say, John, I interviewed several veterans, and one of the common themes was that when they were deployed, things happened to them that they didn't have time to deal with. Traumas happened to them so that they had to go on and do their job, and they didn't have time to process that. And so mm-hmm. I think that part of what happens is these things build on top of each other, and then when somebody transitions home, is when they start having trouble.
And I think that picks up on Juliet's point, too, that, you know, if you're being shot at, you're not going to think, oh, I may have post-traumatic stress disorder somewhere down the line. You just want to get out of a situation where you're being shot at.
I interviewed a veteran in the combat paper workshop who said she had been deployed to Afghanistan, and all she wanted to do was get home. Mm-hmm. And so even though the military was offering her ways to help transition and not get in trouble, all she could think about was getting home, and so she didn't really pay attention. And then when she got home, she had a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And so when she was then deployed to Iraq, when she was coming back that time, the military again offered her solutions to dealing with issues. And that time she said, yes, I need help. And she said that it was talking about her experiences that were the healing. That was the healing part for her. And it wasn't, talking to someone. She said it was actually hearing herself say the things. So it was actually, putting words to their experiences is what they've said was healing.
And Andrew is the veteran here in the discussion. I mean, what was of greater value to you? Being able to in effect express some part of what you'd been through, or have somebody see it and at least have to respond to it, to acknowledge it at some level?
For me, it was the expression. It was getting it out. And, I'm naturally a artistic person. I was a musician, professional percussionist before I even came back to Indiana or joined the military. So that was an avenue that I found I latched onto it very easily, because I was just expressing, they would give us a topic and I would get frustrated at first because they'd only give us 15 minutes and I want, to make this 3-20-hour masterpiece. And then when I realized, I should be focusing on the task, think about this and then here's a piece of chalk, go at it. And so that expression part of it was integral for me.
We're talking about the experiences of veterans on No Limits today. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Candy, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I am working with someone with PTSD. I'm an art teacher, and we've done some therapeutic art processes. We usually deal with artist statements and why you make the work and such. My question is for her, actually. She has PTSD, and I wanted to know the difference between PTSD and sexual abuse victims versus the therapeutic processes for Veterans Coming Home Project, and how is it different and how is it similar?
Thanks very much for the call. That's not an easy question, Candy, but we'll do the best we can. Thank you very
much. I'll take my
certainly.
It off the air.
Thanks.
Thanks, Candy. I think that your consciousness in asking the question first and foremost is very important. And what you're bringing up is the difference in being able to work with someone therapeutically from an art teacher's training versus being able to work with someone as a therapist. And so when people go to therapy school, we learn about the different elements of diagnoses and the different symptoms that occur with one disorder. So if a person has a post-traumatic stress disorder because they are away at combat versus because they might have experienced sexual trauma when they were children, elements of that diagnosis might fit the same criteria, but the etiology or the source of how the diagnosis is developed and assessed obviously comes from different places. And in order to learn more about that, you have to know the person that you're working with. You have to have a lot of information about their biology, their psychology, their social situations, which forms a picture of how you then go about intervening or developing a treatment plan for them.
I'm curious, and I want to pick up on Candy's question because it also raises another possibility. I mean, if you go into the kind of pressure cooker that Andrew was describing at the top of the hour, and he made it clear that there are people who experience far worse things than he has, but that still sounded like a very difficult way to live for a prolonged period. If you go into an experience like that, I mean, there's nothing, it's not like you come to the military or you come to combat as a blank slate. You've already got a series of life experiences. What does having to deal with the stress of that situation do to people who already might have some unresolved issues that they're bringing from their previous life?
I think that that speaks to the complexity of what I will clinically describe as the veteran population. Mm-hmm. And veterans are military service members that have been in many different contexts and situations throughout our entire time. Mm-hmm. And we also need to remember, as Andrew, I think, exemplifies, that veterans are human. Human beings, right? And the experience that they bring to the table before being in the military certainly is going to influence different factors when they get out of the military. So back to that biopsychosocial or factors of resilience or, you know, Viktor Frankl, an existentialist, you know, Viktor Frankl, and he said, whether the gas is at your nose or the gas is at your knees, you're still in the gas. Mm-hmm. And so what we need to do is we need to acknowledge and respect each person's lived experience as it is theirs and understand the importance of doing a full history and assessment of a person when you're working with them. We aren't just little pieces of people plopped together with bubblegum and popsicle sticks, right? Mm-hmm. We're pretty complex. And that's a really important thing to respect throughout the process of providing therapeutic intervention.
Andrew, what is the hardest thing for people to get, to understand about? I'm not gonna ask you to speak for your experience as a veteran. I mean, what's the hardest thing for you to communicate to those people who care about you and want to know what your experience was like?
I think as a veteran, we find so much support out there from our communities, you know, especially from our families, our friends. There's all these different organizations and groups, and everybody out there is very supportive of what myself and other service members do currently, unlike the Vietnam era and things that we look back to. We have it very, I mean, we have everything at our fingertips, but sometimes it's hard to get those veterans out there to come and seek the program out. Or, I mean, that's what my deciding factor was, is I had to stop and go, I want to look for this. I want a solution. I want to make myself better, so I had to go out and get it. So,
what solution did you want?
I think what I've come to realize is I just wanted to be more like me, the me that I remember. And I've realized I'll never be the same person, and none of us are what we were 10 years ago. But I wanted to bring those qualities that I had back into my life again and make that my MO, not just allowing what I was starting to become. That was unacceptable to me. And I think it is for a lot of veterans and people in general out there. They just, some struggle to either show some humility or accept the fact, you know, like alcoholism or anything else like that. Mm-hmm. You have to stop and assess yourself. And, you know, if, you don't need to be an Einstein to figure out when things are going wrong with yourself.
Lee, how much, you know, in the interviews you did with veterans, that sense of recovery, I mean, and to some degree what I'm hearing is feeling like there was a continuum to your life experience, that you didn't become an entirely different person after this, that you are still yourself, was a theme that came out of the interviewing.
There were, for most of the people that I interviewed, you know, they had made progress in therapy and felt like they were back on track. But there were a couple of folks that, you know, were using art to just get through the day still. Not that they were using it to examine what they needed to work on, but just to get them through the day still.
We'll pick up on that after the break. We are talking about veterans and the process of coming home. My guests are Julia King, Lee Dinoon, and Andrew Schneiders. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back to No Limits on this Veterans Day. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking really about the ways that veterans come to terms with their experiences when they come back. My guests are Juliet King, who is the director of the Graduate Art Therapy Program at Heron School of Art and Design, our own Lee Dunoon, who is with WFYI News, and Andrew Schneiders, who is a veteran who has worked through some stuff with art therapy. And right before we went to the break, Lee, you were in the middle of a story. So,
well, you know, Juliet brought up the term resilience a little earlier, and I interviewed a neuroscientist as part of this project, the Veterans Coming Home Project in Chicago, Dr. Lucas Konopka. And he talked a little bit about resilience. So if you have folks that grew up in an abusive home and they joined the military when they were in high school, and then they're sent overseas and they have some very traumatic experiences, they come home and they have a lot that they need to work through. Some of these young people haven't even lived away from home. So they, you know, I know that there are 1,500 veterans right now enrolled at IUPUI, and the coordinator over there, Juliet, knows her name.
Winnie Wilson.
Winnie Wilson. She has talked about how, you know, these people that are trying to enroll in school, some of them didn't have places to live. There were veterans that, you know, wanted to take care or take advantage of the GI Bill and get their schooling. But, you know, they had some very serious issues just to be able to get to a class and pay attention. They, you know.
Well, and some of that, I would, you know, I mean, we really don't like to talk about this much, I think, as a society and a culture, but war, by definition, is trauma. It is something that, you know, and if it isn't trauma for an individual, that's probably not someone we want to arm. You know, if they don't experience it as trauma. So, you know, everyone is going to have something they have to process when they come back. Andrew, you are nodding your head fairly emphatically there.
Yeah.
What's going through your mind right now as we're saying that?
It's more political based. I don't want to comment on
well,
when you talk about
to,
war.
The show's no limits, so you're allowed to have an opinion.
I do. Okay. Yeah. I think war it should be less a business. It should be less. I encourage someone to go out there and vote and put me out of business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a soldier. Even as an active duty soldier that I am, you know, we get so caught up in letting these politicians do what they want. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that the military doesn't have a place. It does have a place. And we're one of the best by far out there. So having said all that, though, what I've seen in the, I don't know how to really expand on it without, how to put it eloquently. I wish people, like, kids need to know it's not a video game, you know. Yeah. And the oversensitization of the movies that we create and how we spend our idle time, you know, we should be thank a vet, you know, and go up and show your appreciation for and your patriotism for someone who stood up for you in combat, in war, what have you. But you know, don't make it a 10% off one day a week. Don't sell cars on Memorial Day weekend sale. Don't, like, all this, you know, it seems like sometimes, oh, hey, buy this bottle of ketchup for $3 and we'll give 10 cents to this little project. You know, don't mind the $2.90 I just made off you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of mentality, it's just, it's been grinding on me lately, just to tell you the truth.
Well, and I'm glad.
How we socially perceive war.
Well, yeah. And you know, that's sort of what I'm glad, actually, you expressed yourself. I know there was some reluctance there, but I think that's a view that will resonate with an awful lot of people. We are talking about veterans and their experiences here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Rev, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. My question to the veteran, has he been exposed to cognitive behavioral therapy, also known as CBT, at the VA? I have twice there. It seems like it's the first thing you run into. My wife has also been exposed to cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, in relation to a sleep disorder. She was treated by the only board-certified sleep doctor in Indiana who has a PhD from Drexel. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Rev. Well, Juliet, actually, I know it was thrown to Andrew first, but probably you ought to explain what CBT
right.
is so that we have a frame of reference.
CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy, and it is the type of treatment that I believe is most utilized by the Veterans Affairs system, and it is very effective in many ways, and it's highly empiricized, which means that it's easy to measure progress or regression mm-hmm. when we're working with cognitive behavioral goals. I will note that mindfulness-based work is actually a cognitive behavioral intervention. And so what Dr. Ludke and I were doing in the development of the philosophy for our intervention and for the group is to combine the creative arts expression of art therapy with cognitive techniques such as mindfulness-based theory. And what we really want to do is to expand our pilot group work into more specific studies so that we can look at the effects of that, because we know we need data to.
How do you know that with this kind of art, that what are some of the benchmarks that you know that the therapy is being effective?
Well, one is when we do pretty simply a pre and post measure. And so prior to the pilot groups that we ran at the VA, we had people fill out a lot of series of questionnaires in terms of what we'll call symptoms and in terms of basically thoughts and feelings. And you fill that out before the group, and then you fill that out at the end of the group's duration. And that's one way of measuring. These are kind of empirical measures that we in the therapy and healthcare community need to have in order to, you know, gauge efficacy. But I got to tell you, the most telling way of knowing that the work that we're doing is effective is by the response of the people. And every single person that participated in both rounds of the pilot groups at the VA were extremely positive about their experience and were able to identify different areas that they improved in. And to the point where we have three people in the Veterans Coming Home Project that are willing and courageous enough to speak up and talk about how helpful art therapy has been to them. And so that, to me, is the most obvious indication that something is working.
Is part of the challenge here that there is a reluctance to talk about these experiences? I mean, to some degree we do, we put folks like Andrew in a culture in which to some degree confession is seen as a sign of weakness. If you admit to being scared or you admit to being, you know, feeling overwhelmed or even just experiencing doubt, that calls your, Andrew, again, you're leaning into the microphone here.
Well, I will say the Army has great programs out. They are trying to fix these issues. They're not turning a blind eye to the issues within our ranks. Sexual assault, sexual prevention, suicide, you mentioned resilience. We have a resiliency program mm-hmm. that we built into our ranks. So, I mean, that is occurring within, you know, the service members now that are currently serving. But it's still kind of a canned product, if you would. So if you are a little more intellectual or what have you, it doesn't, you know, you might not be the issue, but it doesn't solve everything for you sometimes. That's why these creative concepts are, you know, a good outlet to have.
Could I add to that?
Yeah.
The reason, you know, that that question is basically the reason for why I have worked so closely with Drew Cameron over the last few years to bring combat paper to Indiana, because realizing that there is so much stigma that's attached to engaging in treatment, not just for veterans, but anybody that goes to therapy. Therapy is not easy. And it's not always fun. Mm-hmm. And so what I noticed with the veteran population, however, is that by the nature of their experience, I think there are some other challenges that cause them to have even more resistance than some other groups of people in getting into treatment. Mm-hmm. And when you bring a project like Combat Paper into the mix, then people are in the door. And as you said to me one time, Andrew, you said, if this was called art therapy paper, I wouldn't come. Yeah. But because it's combat paper, I'll show up. Mm-hmm. So you have all these people that are willing to come in the door and engage in the process.
Important question. Your resistance, Andrew, is it because it was combat paper, you'd come. If it had been called art therapy paper, you wouldn't have. Is it the art or the therapy piece that you would resist?
I mean, we struggle with that. That term, that word,
which word though?
The therapy.
No, therapy.
Well,
okay.
We struggle with art too. You know, creativity is something we need in our society desperately right now. But, it's tough. It's tough to put yourself out there, just like coming on this radio station or supporting the projects these guys have done that I've been with them externally. It's hard to get out there and do this as an individual, but. You know, maybe the labeling does help. I mean, you're talking about the military. We are a huge, diverse. Mm-hmm. We employ the biggest range of human beings you can imagine. You know, from one to you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many walks of life that I serve with that wear the same uniform, and so you gotta come up with the different ways to get us in the door, so to speak.
We've gotten a Facebook comment. From someone who says, I am a veteran and a woman, and I am very motivated and inspired by the ideas and processes of art therapy. However, I find it exceedingly difficult to engage co-ed post-traumatic stress disorder activities. I support your efforts and consider them life-saving and deeply important. My inability to engage is due to the fact that I am a military sexual trauma survivor and find it impossible to engage groups that include men. Unfortunately, which means that I am limited with respect to the sorts of therapeutic group activities I can engage. Tragically, this is true for a high percentage of women veterans. Please consider creating groups for women soon. We need outlets like this, too. I find that we are forever the official afterthought. Please accept my criticism as it's intended, with a desire to find ways to integrate 15% of the veteran community into important healing modalities. Well, first, I'd like to thank the listener for sharing that. Yeah, thank you very much for sharing that. Juliet, I'll let you, I think, respond.
Yeah, and that is so powerful. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. And the art therapy programming in Indianapolis right now is slim. I moved here a few years ago to develop this graduate program at Heron, and in the last few years, we have developed 30 internship sites for our students, and one of them is at the Vet Center, which just started this past September, and I'm so thankful for that, and I'm so thankful for people at the Vet Center and at the VA who have been willing to engage in a conversation about the development of this kind of service that we can offer. At the same time, as the commenter notes, there are no existing programs. And in order to create existing programs, we need funding and we need people to do it. And so I say, absolutely. And your experiences are specific to you. And any good therapist is going to understand that. And any good therapist is going to, within whatever realm they can, create as much of a diverse opportunity for people to engage in therapeutic experiences of many different kinds.
Lee, I imagine there are some resources, obviously, on the website that you were referencing, the Veterans Coming Home. That maybe some places, if not art therapy, places that she might be able to find someone to work with.
Her issue is very specific, military sexual trauma, and I interviewed a woman that had also suffered military sexual trauma, and she had the same problem. She really was hoping that there would be art therapy available for women with those issues. So because she didn't want to be in a group with men. So you know, thank you for your show today, because this is one of the really important things, is that there aren't outlets for people. Art therapy isn't available.
If not art therapy, any kind of therapy for this woman. You can feel the pain in that message.
And absolutely.
There are specific groups that are offered by the VA for people that have endured military sexual trauma, both men and women. I will say that some colleagues of mine, art therapists, have been talking recently about the need to develop these groups. So please email me at kingjul@iupui.edu if you have an interest in something like this, and we can develop a referral process.
Go ahead and give your email address again in case she was not sitting there with a pencil.
Sure. It's kingjul@iupui.edu, and that's kingjul@iupui.edu.
Well, in terms of and thank you, by the way, for offering to work with her. I want to thank this woman again for sharing her story and her comments. Andrew, on this Veterans Day, you know, what do you hope people would take away from your story?
Well, I encourage citizens, civilians, what have you, to keep the support that I receive daily. I wear the uniform daily, and I go get gas, and I stop at the store, and I'm greeted all the time, you know, with a great level of support. So I want to encourage that. The part that I have about my experiences is meant to encourage those out there that know or are experiencing you know, the turmoil of life, to go out there and seek some help. And it doesn't have to be catastrophic, and don't think it's minuscule, even if it's just some little topic or issue that you feel you're having. You go out and make it right, whatever that means, whether it's faith-based or the VA or community-based support.
Andrew, I'd like to thank you for sharing your story with us. I'd also like to thank my other guests, Juliet King and Lee DeNoon, and of course, Andrew Schneiders. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. I hope you will come back on Thursday when we'll have Diane Rehm as our guest. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.